Halloween is just around the corner, but is it safe to send your kids out trick-or-treating? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead on the show, some tips to celebrate Halloween safely this weekend. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you how a local clinical trial is part of the global race to develop a coronavirus vaccine. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. Sadly, Florida is now nearing 800,000 active cases of COVID-19. To date, there have been 16,571 deaths in Florida from coronavirus. So amidst these numbers, it's good news that Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry wisely decided to extend a mask mandate for Duval County for another month. Keep your masks on when you leave your home and go out and about. And in the midst of the pandemic, this is a question on many people's minds right now. Is there a safe way to trick or treat this year? Halloween is Saturday, and many parents are struggling with this question. Now, most public health experts agree the holiday cannot look the same this year as it usually has been. You know, all of us at the door happily handing out goodies into the hands of cute little costumed kids, or even letting them plunge into a bucket full of treats that you leave on your porch. They say even that is risky. So what should we do to enjoy Halloween this year? We have some great advice right now from Dr. Jeff Goldhagen. He is chief of the Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics at UF Health Jacksonville, and he's on the line. Dr. Goldhagen, always so good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
And if you are worried about Halloween this year and want some ideas on how to celebrate safely with your kids, or even if you don't have kids, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Call us up now. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. So it's been a scary year to begin with, Dr. Goldhagen. And now the spooky holiday is around the corner, but it's pandemic Halloween, which just sounds so depressing. You know, at my home, we bought candy to hand out to kids just sort of out of force of habit. And then we realized, well, we probably can't hand most of this out. And we're not sure if trick-or-treaters will even come to our door this year. So as we contemplate Halloween this year, what's your advice for everyone? What should we do?
Well, I think your introduction was probably the most appropriate, and that is we're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a surge, and it is not safe to have children, and particularly young children, walking around the community. And so I think the first perspective is that we need to stay safe. This pandemic, this virus, has a density in our region, and it's just not safe to send our kids out into the midst of it, which then opens the question, then how can we safely celebrate Halloween or Pandemic-ween, as people are referring to it? Mm-hmm. And the first is that we still need to always focus on isolating, just social distancing, mask wearing, and so on. But then there are interesting approaches that people are taking, one of which is family gatherings, family Halloween celebrations, with groups that are, in fact, have been isolating with one another. There are events happening out in the community. I'm going to be Grouch at one of them.
Are you?
Retreat. Yes, it's hard to believe. completely inconsistent, although my...
So at odds with your personality.
My kids said, well, what else is new? But
where are you going to be?
Event.
Where will you be?
Well, Dreams Come True is having a event around their facility for kids with complex medical conditions. Kids are dealing with hospice and palliative care issues and so on. So it'll be a wonderful opportunity for kids that oftentimes don't have a chance to get out to come to celebrate Halloween in a trunk-or-treat kind of environment. I know churches and other entities are having similar events. And so it's really about creativity on one hand, but on the other hand, making sure that we protect our children in this very difficult time.
So everyone listening, how will you celebrate Halloween this weekend? Give us a call as we speak with top pediatrician, Dr. Jeff Goldhagen of UF Health Jax. Give us a call, 549-2937. Okay, so risk reduction strategies are the name of the game, Dr. Goldhagen. What about the idea of putting candy into a bunch of Ziploc baggies and just leaving them outside on your porch for trick-or-treaters? Is that safe?
Well, it is. The issue is risk reduction. We can't completely eliminate risk, but then we have to consider what risk we want to take. And so bringing large numbers of children interacting with one another, many of them who may be too young to wear a mask, many of them who refuse to use a mask, bringing people into a concentrated place is just not what we ought to be doing at this period of time. There is some indication that, in fact, the disease is not spread as frequently as we thought it might be spread via surfaces, but still we have lots of children reaching into the same bucket at the same time. And so the issue is eliminating as much risk as we possibly can. The consequences are too substantial to take that risk.
And what would you say to parents listening to this who say, look, you know, it's been a horribly tough year. I want my kids to enjoy the night. I want to send them out. I want them to dress up in costumes and do all that stuff.
Well, I would say that this is a very, very difficult time. And we have to balance safety with mental health and other issues that children, developmental issues that are imperative for children as well. Certainly, Halloween parades where kids are masked and are distanced from one another is one way that people can celebrate, in particular around their around their homes and that sort of thing. But it is a very difficult time. We have opened up our schools, and interestingly enough, the more we're learning, the more we seem to come to an understanding that schools are themselves not super spreader places. But those environments are using plastic shields and masks and so on and so forth. So there are significant safety precautions taken that aren't possible to do out in a trick-or-treat environment.
Let's go to your calls now as we speak with pediatrician Dr. Jeff Goldhagen of UF Health Jax. Here's our question, everybody. How will you celebrate Halloween this weekend? It's pandemic Halloween, sadly. People will still find ways to enjoy the spooky time. Give us a call, though. It's 549-2937. Jeff is in Arlington. Hi, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. So I'm going to have gloves on. I've got a variety of candies. I'm going to ask the kids across the table which one they want. I'll put it in a bowl, shove it across to them. They can take it, and then I'll wipe out the bowl and wait for the next group.
Hey, that sounds like a plan, Jeff. Thanks for letting us know. Dr. Goldhagen, people are getting creative, aren't they? I've even seen videos on social media of people rigging up like a T-shirt gun where they can shoot the candy across the yard at the kids, or a string where they can, like a zip line where they can zip line the candy over from their porch to the kids on the sidewalk. People are trying to find ways to do this.
Well, and, the question is Jeff going to have lines on the driveway reaching up to his house with 6 feet distances? So the challenge is to make sure that there's social distancing and mask wearing while we address these creative approaches. It's really important. Halloween is the first of at least several holidays that are coming up. We're going to be dealing with the same issue related to Thanksgiving. We're going to be dealing with the same issue related to Christmas and Hanukkah and other holidays that will be coming up in front of us here. And so we're going to need to think again, over and over again, as to what are appropriate ways that we're going to celebrate these holidays that are going to necessarily be different than celebrations in the past.
549-2937. Katie on the West Side. Hi, Katie. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. So this will be our family's first time in 14 years not to get to trick-or-treat and do those things. We don't feel it's safe for us. So we're getting together with one other family and throwing a big Halloween party just for our four kids.
Oh, that sounds good, Katie.
Taking the money we would have spent on costumes, using it for food and decorations, and still giving them, you know, that Halloween experience without going out.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Katie, for sharing that. So, Dr. Goldhagen, people are planning small little get-togethers with just their immediate family, I think, a lot this year, too.
Right. And, you know, the only issue to be concerned about is whether or not you're introducing another family that you have not been socially isolating from before. So there's still issues related to being in contact with folks that you haven't been isolating with before. And I just encourage as much as possible mask wearing and social distancing. The other perspective which we need to understand is that the more we've learned about the virus, the more we understand that the 6-foot limit is not really a firm limit, that the virus is spread via aerosols. Those aerosols can travel 20, 30 feet. And so it's critically important to wear your mask when you're in proximity to other folks, even if it's beyond 6 feet. So the 6 feet limit is kind of artificial. We grew up with it over the past 6 months or so, but we do know that the virus is spread by aerosols. So even if you're beyond six feet, please wear a mask.
Yeah, absolutely right. 549-2937. Vicki is in Riverside. Hi, Vicki. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to share some ideas that my daughter had come up with. She has three small children at home, ages 5 and under, and instead of trick-or-treating this year, they're celebrating Halloween. So they are doing, all the kids have, just three kids, they have Halloween costumes, and they're doing a Halloween dance party tonight at home, and they're going to be having scary movie night one night, and then Halloween night, they are going to dress up and do a scavenger hunt in their yard for candy.
That's kind of cool.
They're just doing some fun things, but staying safe.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that. Vicki in Riverside calling in. More women than usual calling in this morning, Dr. Goldhagen, and that does not surprise me because I do think it's generalizing a bit, but it's the moms out there that have put a lot of thought into this and tried to figure out what they're going to do.
Right, because most of the fathers just come as grouch anyway, so it's relatively irrelevant.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with UF Health's Dr. Jeff Goldhagen about Halloween, what are your plans to celebrate safely? 549-2937. Angela in St. Augustine. Hi, Angela.
Hey, hi. How are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
Okay. So my husband, I'm calling in, but my husband came up with this idea. We have a middle schooler, and we thought about giving him, you know, $20 or some sort of V-Bucks or Roblox bucks, and saying, you know, don't go trick-or-treating per se, but if you want to do a catwalk of your costume around the neighborhood, you know, just because it's fun to dress up, we're kind of working with that angle this year. So he's not actually going up to houses and staying socially distant this year.
That's great, Angela. Thanks for that. And thanks to all the parents out there that are taking the time to figure out something for their children. Because, you know, Dr. Goldhagen, whether it's Halloween or anything else that we've been through in this year, 2020, We've just lost so much. We've lost so much this year. And all of the traditions and cherished holiday activities like Halloween, we're having to somehow try to cobble together a solution in this horrible time. And, you know, it really means a lot to hear out there how many people are trying to be positive and work their way through it.
Yeah, and we've known from the beginning that perhaps the largest impact is going to be on children who have a developmental imperative and all the issues related to socialization and mental health. We are seeing a significant increase in the number of children and youth that are dealing with mental health issues. And so it's clear that children and youth are the group, the demographic group, that is perhaps incurring the most significant impact. They're not getting sick physically, and they're not dying at the rates that older people are, but they are having significant issues related to mental health, developmental issues, educational issues, and so on. And what we can do is mitigate the situation as much as possible. Families are coming together. Families are coming up with creative ways of addressing the developmental issues that children go through. But the fact is that we're going to have to address these issues over time. And it's not a singular point in time that these developmental concerns will need to be addressed over time. And when we have a vaccine and so on, then we're not out of the woods, so to speak, because we're going to need to address the educational issues and development issues that have so profoundly impacted children. So we're in this for the long haul, not the short haul, for sure.
Absolutely right. It's so true. And it's so upsetting for all of us with children. Here is a comment on Facebook from Siobhan. I'm staying at home with the kiddos, enlisting the robo vacuum to deliver treats to any kids who might come by. It's actually a number I hope is zero, that she says. And let's get a few more calls on the air as we talk about Halloween. 549-2937. Manny on the north side. Hi, Manny. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your call.
My pleasure. I'm actually here representing old dads, apparently, who are not calling in. So thank you for listening to me.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that for my husband and I, because we're actually a gay couple and we have two kids, so we are actually really excited about Halloween, and our kids are very excited as well. We decided this year to create a haunted garage. So we turned our garage into a haunted house for our kids, and we're just going to keep it for the four of us. But we are going to have a blast with each other, so it should be fun for us.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for letting us know what your family's doing, Manny. And a tweet from Mary. My friend says her son will be trick-or-treating at home, just going from room to room and knocking on each door to get himself some candy. Lots of creative solutions out there from parents letting us know how they'll celebrate Halloween in this challenging time. It's 549-2937. Christopher is in St. Augustine. Hi, Christopher. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Another dad here on the
another
line.
Another dad. Great.
Just knowing that there's people out here in this town really paying attention to science and really listening to what the professionals have to say is really refreshing in this environment. I know a lot of times we get mixed signals from the top end of this country, but I'm really glad that everybody in the middle is doing what they can. We designed a candy chute made of PVC pipe, and we incorporated our masks into our costumes this year. We had originally done a whole family of Star Wars items. I thought it was going to be Yoda, Baby Yoda, and all the families dressing up as different characters, but we decided to use this opportunity to show our reverence to the first responders and dress as first responders because they already have masks into their costumes.
Oh, that's fantastic, Christopher.
That is
thank
great.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Have fun with that. Let's go to Brandy at the beaches. Hi, Brandy.
Hi, Hi. I have two small boys, and this year I was thinking about keeping it close to us with our school bubble and doing a pinata, just stuffed with a bunch of surprise candy, and that way it's a surprise for them to go through, and they still have fun.
And they can knock the heck out of that pinata, right?
Exactly. Get some energy out.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Brandy. Okay, so Dr. Goldhagen, lots of interesting ideas out there. What else can you share with everyone about safety? As I mentioned at the top of the hour, cases do continue to climb in Florida. There is a mask mandate for Duval County. Unfortunately, there are not mandates for the surrounding counties in our listening area.
Right. Well, one of the things I think is really important is to accept the fact that children have wonderful imaginations and wonderful creativity. And if you give them the opportunity to imagine and create, whether that's walking around the community or the types of strategies that people are using in their homes, they'll enjoy it. And unfortunately, as we get older, we lose the imagination and creativity that we had as children. And so there are multiple ways and multiple safe ways, as we've just heard, to celebrate Halloween without necessarily going trick-or-treating throughout the community. And children will appreciate it and enjoy it the time in their homes and with their families.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
The older the children, remember that kids 10 to 10 years of age and older seem to be at a very similar risk for contracting the disease and spreading the disease as adults as well. And so for those older kids, it's really important to make sure that they're not out there risking themselves and then the community and families that they come back to.
Scott writes on our Facebook page, "We made a haunted fence out of a few old fence panels. We set it up a few feet from the curb. We'll sit on one side 6 feet back and periodically hang goodie bags on the fence for kids. We used plenty of hand sanitizer to fill the bags, and we will not touch them." Susie writes, "My neighbor and I have 6 feet tubes through which to slide socially distant treats to our neighborhood kids. We are excited to offer a safe trick-or-treat stop for the kids that live around us. I want to thank everyone who let us know how they'll be celebrating Halloween." It's just fascinating to hear all of the options people are doing out there. But again, be safe. Be careful, follow public health guidelines as you celebrate the holiday Saturday. And as you said, Dr. Goldhagen, into the rest of the festive period as we head into November and December, we need to stay mindful, right?
Right. And I thank everybody for all the wonderful work they're doing to keep our community safe, our first responders in particular. I mean, it's really clear that there will be no panacea in the short term, and that we're going to have to maintain our diligence over the next 6 months to a year for sure, and just stay safe.
Thank you so much. So good to get you on the show. Thanks for doing it on short notice, by the way. He's Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, Chief of the Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics at UF Health in Jacksonville. Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you. And thank your listeners as well.
Well, much more still ahead. Later, we'll check in on celebrity chef Kenny Gilbert. The Top Chef fan favorite is opening up a new place in Springfield. But up next.
So there are five candidate vaccines that are currently in phase 3 clinical trials around the world. Very exciting. We're delighted to be in the midst of it.
We'll tell you how local patients and a local research center are taking part in clinical trials for a coronavirus vaccine. That's after this.
You blink, you reach for that handful of chips, you scroll through social media, it's all happening on automatic pilot. When it comes to being well-informed, being more mindful of where you get your news can make a big difference in how you see the world. To get your information in context, to gain different perspectives, and to understand real issues, choose NPR as your go-to source for election news. 2020 election, it's time to listen.
here on WJCT News 89.9.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9. Welcome back. Clinical trials are underway in our area right now as part of the worldwide race to develop a vaccine for the coronavirus. For more, I got an update from Dr. Michael Corin of the Jacksonville Center for Clinical Research. Hi, Dr. Corin. Thanks so much for coming back and joining us again. Good to talk to you.
Same here. Good morning.
So the last time you were on the show, you talked about what we knew about the worldwide race to develop a COVID-19 vaccine. Since that time, you've been following all of the twists and turns. What's new with this effort?
Oh, it's very exciting. We're delighted to be in the midst of it. So there are five candidate vaccines that are currently in phase three clinical trials around the world. And the two that seem to be ahead are the technologies that use messenger RNA. And just to remind everybody, those would be the Moderna program and the Pfizer program. And interestingly, and I've never seen this in my career, the sponsors of those programs have asked us to continue to enroll new patients, which is usually a very good sign that they're feeling confident about the safety of the vaccines, and hopefully we'll get a readout on how effective they are in short order. The two other programs have been put on a brief hold for safety evaluations, and those would be the AstraZeneca program and the Johnson & Johnson program. Now, both of those are different than the two programs that I mentioned previously because they actually involve injecting a virus. It's a modified virus. It's called a modified adenovirus that takes on some of the characteristics of COVID-19, but still it involves the injection of a virus. Mm. And in those studies, there's a pause in enrollment of new patients in the U.S. as they evaluate the safety of it. But again, these studies have had tens of thousands of patients in it, so I don't expect any major problems with them. And then the fifth candidate is coming from a company called Novavax. And that's interesting in that they have a recombinant spike protein vaccine with what's called an adjuvant to allow the immune system to respond very aggressively to a very small amount of antigen or protein. So the thought there is that you only have to give really extremely small amounts of the COVID spike protein, but the immune system learns how to respond to it through this enhancing factor. So those are some of the programs, and they're really enrolling rapidly. And as I mentioned, because the messenger RNA programs have over-enrolled their studies now, I'm feeling pretty confident that we'll probably have some answers in short order.
Wow. And what's your office's involvement in all of this?
So we are participants in the Pfizer program, the Moderna program, and the Novavax program. So we have this running in two different offices in our network here in Northeast Florida, and I am overseeing these programs.
That's so exciting to know that there's a local connection to this. Now, I know you have some comments to make about Regeneron. When President Trump was hospitalized at Walter Reed in Maryland for coronavirus, he was treated with a number of experimental medications, one of which was Regeneron. There, you have some new data to release about that. What is it?
So interesting. Yes, thank you for asking that question. So Regeneron has created a product that involves creating human antibodies that come from genetically modified mice. And I've actually gotten the chance to look at the laboratory where these mice are raised. It's just absolutely fascinating. But these mice are able to actually produce human antibodies, and these mice have now been, quote, programmed to create human antibodies against the spike protein from COVID-19. So this cocktail is being developed in clinical trials, and I was actually pretty surprised to hear that President Trump got this cocktail even before he went to the hospital. And I'm surprised because, one, it's not an approved product, and two, I was not aware of any data to support the product at that point. It was still completely in the early stages of investigation. Literally a couple days after the president got the cocktail, we found out that they did have a little bit of data that they shared with the rest of the world shortly after the president got the vaccine, got that product. Not a vaccine, it's a treatment. And what they found in a study of about 275 patients is that if you're diagnosed with COVID and you're already making your own antibodies, your disease tends to be mild, and this cocktail really didn't help. But if you're diagnosed with COVID and you have not yet made antibodies, then this cocktail actually reduced the severity of the illness quite a bit. It brought down the symptom days from 15 down to 7, which is really quite remarkable. So what that tells us is that making antibodies is so important, and people that are good at making antibodies will be protected. That also feeds in really well with the whole vaccine program, because we know that these vaccines that are being developed are really good at creating neutralizing antibodies, which are the key antibodies that protect us. So the fact that we know the vaccines produce antibodies makes me believe that they should be very effective at either preventing infection or, at worst, making infections turn into very mild illnesses.
So what's the takeaway then for the average patient out there as we continue to mask and socially distance in the absence of a vaccine? What do you think is on the horizon next year for trying to get better control of this pandemic when it comes to vaccines and other treatments?
Sure. So, again, everything is moving along at a nice pace, in my view. Here in Jacksonville, you mentioned we're involved, and we've actually dosed over 700 people in these studies, in these vaccine studies. And locally, we're not seeing any safety issues, and I heard no correspondence from the sponsors that we've had safety issues throughout the country, which now involves over 50,000 patients. So I'm feeling very optimistic that the vaccine is going to be a big part of the solution moving forward. And I'd also mention that because we've been given permission to continue to enroll patients, if people that hear this interview, if they want to reach out to us, we're happy to get them involved. But I will say that we're focusing on certain high-risk populations at this point, which are people over 65 years old, healthcare workers, patients who are HIV positive, and ethnic minorities. Those are the groups that we're really focused on right now. So we, in order to make sure that the vaccine studies represent the full scale of populations around the country. But getting back to your question, if the vaccines are shown to be as effective as I think they will be, then there should be a very aggressive ramp out of the vaccines people. Obviously, there will be some manufacturing constraints, and the government will probably decide who gets the vaccine first. I'd imagine healthcare workers and other people at high exposure risk would be the first to be treated. People in nursing homes, for example, we know are very vulnerable, but also be amongst those groups of most vulnerable patients who would probably get the vaccine early. And I think that's going to be a big part of the strategy. But that doesn't prevent some other things from happening. Obviously, treatments for people who are already infected will continue to be developed, and there are a number of those treatments that are being looked at in clinical trials. And, of course, just good public health hygienic measures. So even when the vaccine comes out, don't expect that all of a sudden all of our stadiums are going to be filled to capacity again, because that would not be a smart public health move. But I think slowly but surely we can make things easier for people and hopefully slowly but surely open up the economy. So that's my prediction.
Let's hope it's an accurate one, yeah. Well, let me jump in and ask you then,
sure.
Since we're coming up to a break here, how can people contact you and be part of these trials, people that might be interested locally?
Sure. Well, our website is www.jaxresearch.com, and you can connect through the internet and speak with us. Our main number would be 904-730-0101 or 904-730-0166.
Dr. Michael Corrin, it's fascinating to speak with you. Again, that's jaxresearch.com. Thanks so much for joining us and bringing us up to date on all of this. Great to have your insights.
My pleasure, and thank you for giving me a call, Melissa. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Today in Music History from Anthology, October 29th, 1971, Duane Allman dies in a motorcycle crash in Macon, Georgia at age 24. I'm David Luckin. You can hear Duane Allman and the Allman Brothers Band on Anthology on the WJCT app and 89.9 HD3.
Well, a special event is coming up this weekend, virtually, of course, that will try to bring this community together. Not an easy task in this polarized era, but a coalition of faith leaders says they're going to try. I got a preview from One Jack's executive director, Kyle Reese. Kyle Reese, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
So at this time, when we're heading into this incredibly intense and divisive election, you want to let the community know about a citywide event happening this weekend. It's called Jacksonville Together, Disrupting Division. Tell us about it.
Well, this started with Project Common Grounds, which is a part of Palms Presbyterian Church. And they reached out to us at One Jack's to see if we wanted to partner with them. And it's really an opportunity for people of Christian faith together. Dr. Alan Hilton is the executive director of an organization called A House United. And he is really working in interfaith settings, certainly, but also within Christianity. He talks about that Christianity has been a divisive force, throwing gas on the flame of the American political polarization. So this is really an opportunity for the Christian tradition to sort of get its house in order, if you will, and really show that we can come together around something besides difference and partisanship.
And, of course, that's what One Jack's is all about, bringing people together, bridging divisions in the community, religious, ethnic, political. And so as I look at the promotion for this event, it says the idea is to discuss strategies to overcome division that threaten the very social fabric that binds us together. I think that's something so many Americans are so worried about right now, that our social fabric is being ripped apart. So you're asking people to zoom on to this virtual event and learn some ways to engage with people who might see the world differently than you. What will people learn?
Well, I think one thing, and I too worry about the social fabric, and I think it's almost stretched to capacity, if we follow that analogy. I think one of the things that that we will learn, and one of the things that I think provide great hope, is that effective efforts that begin locally, that we are not our party affiliation, we are not our racial or ethnic identity, we are the thing that brings us together is we share this space called Jacksonville. So I think beginning locally provides the seeds for some positive work, I think. So I think that's one of the geniuses of this. It will be Jacksonville clergy. It will be Jacksonville congregation. And can we begin to have a different narrative than I am X and you are Y, so therefore we are polarized and we cannot speak to one another? Can we begin to see we share this place called Jacksonville and we have a love for it and we want it to be the best it can be, and it can only be that if we can do it together?
And you said this is a conversation for people who go to Christian churches in the community, but it's not limited to that group. Anyone can be part of this, right?
It is not. It is open to all, and it's really, I think it's refreshing because it is an admission by Christians that Christians have not always been part of the solution, and that Christianity has played a part in the polarization of our country, and this is a way for the Christian house, anyway, to say, there is a different way to do this, and we need to begin with our own house before we begin to look at anyone else's.
And when you say Christianity hasn't always been part of the solution, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think you see across the broader Christian landscape that churches are becoming more and more homogeneous, whether it be coalescing around the far right or, to be honest, coalescing around the far left. I think the church is to be a place that honors all perspectives and all worldviews, and the church can only be effective if it does that and there is diversity within it.
This is something that you really have made your life's work, as the executive director of One Jax, as well as being a local faith leader. For people who aren't familiar with One Jax, can you take a moment to explain what One Jax is all about?
Well, thanks for that question. It's a great honor to be a part of the organization. And One Jax has made its work for the last 50 years, and we are celebrating our 50th anniversary, of bringing people of difference together, because we believe that diversity brings creativity, it brings passion, it brings understanding, and so we bring people of all sorts of differences together around common work, around common conversation. So all of those things that threaten to divide us as a community, we work to build bridges between those things so that people can come together and that the community can be everything that we know it can be.
And check out their website, onejax.org. And then at the same time, mark your calendar for this Sunday evening, Sunday, November 1st, 6:30 p.m., for this special citywide event, Jacksonville Together Disrupting Division. Now, this will be on Facebook, Zoom, Facebook Live, but people do need to register, correct?
Yes, and registration will go to the point of the event. But if you'll just Google Jacksonville Together, whether on YouTube or Facebook, it'd be easy to find.
And Kyle Reese, Executive Director of One Jax, always good to hear your voice. Thanks for letting us know all about it.
Melissa, thank you so much for having me and for all you do for Jacksonville.
So check that out this weekend. And in a moment, we'll check in with Jacksonville's celebrity chef, Kenny Gilbert. He's back with a brand new restaurant. Find out what the top chef fan favorite is up to and what he's cooking up just for you. That's after this here on First Coast Connect. Don't go away.
I'm Agata Gardner, and I'm a volunteer on WJCT's Community Advisory Board. I grew up listening to public radio, and my son now is starting to value it. He'll ask follow-up questions that make it clear to me that he gets it, that that's a complicated issue. And I think it is starting in his own little six-year-old mind to make him realize that the world isn't black and white. And I think that WJCT does a really great job in bringing integrity to the news. This is WJCT News 89.9.
People are starting to be concerned that even if somebody succeeds in producing a vaccine, that not everybody will get equitable access to that vaccine.
I'm Marco Werman from The World. Our reporters and producers keep track of news from countries around the globe to bring you the latest on how other governments are managing the pandemic and what their experiences can tell us. Keeping you up to date on The World.
Today at 3 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Polls show the presidential race in Pennsylvania is tight. We'll hear from black voters in Philadelphia, including 65-year-old Larry Mattis, who's fed up with politics.
This is the worst I've seen in anything. It's just ridiculous. It's upsetting, and it's time for something different.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
of the next fresh air. We'll talk about the profound and enduring impact of the coronavirus on the way we live. It's the subject of the new book, Apollo's Arrow, by Dr. Nicholas Christakis, who will be our guest. He's a professor at Yale, where he directs the Human Nature Lab. Join us.
Today at 12, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Tough. That was the word used by the president to sum up whether his party can hold on to the Senate. Just a handful of races will determine the balance of power. Earlier this week, we went to Arizona, Montana, Iowa, and South Carolina. Now we're off to Georgia and Maine, and we'll get the latest on what's been billed as a Tar Heel toss-up. Those stories next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, celebrity chef Kenny Gilbert first made a name for himself on Top Chef and other Food Network shows, where he won and became a fan favorite for his tasty creations. And he, of course, has had several restaurant concepts through the years here in Jacksonville. Well, guess what? Chef Kenny is out with a new restaurant concept that's opening up in Springfield. It's called Silky's Chicken and Champagne Bar. Chef Kenny Gilbert is on the line to give us a preview. Kenny, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to hear your voice, and I'm so excited to see you're back with a new place opening up in Springfield. So tell us about Silky's.
Oh, gosh. So Silky's has been a concept I've been making for a while. We were featured at Southeast Food & Wine a few years back, and we participated in an event. It's called Chicken Coop, which they highlighted fried chicken and Dom Perignon. And, you know, we had a lot of great crowd appeal for the dishes we were putting out. And Anna, my wife and partner, said, you know, Kenny, we need to bring this to Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville would embrace this. There's nothing like it. And she's been talking about it for a while. So since we've been on quarantine and kind of stuck in the house since like March, you know, I was kind of cooking some meals out of the house and serving to some of the nurses and some of the workers that were, you know, didn't have time because of some of the restrictions. And I was just kind of testing some things out, and the space became available around the corner from the house, literally 2 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
So we met up with the landlord and we negotiated a deal, and he gave us an offer we couldn't refuse. And so we decided to take the house off the market. We're not moving to Raleigh, where we were going to be opening a restaurant there. We decided not to go up.
Wow.
And,
well, good for us.
So we decided to stay in the neighborhood. And so we're going to be highlighting, all things chicken, and champagne, mainly with fried chicken and biscuits and different champagne cocktails. So
know, kind
we'll
of a high-low vibe, which I think is terrific.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to be able to give some things that are comforting. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What could be more comforting than fried chicken, in which we need comfort right now? Now, this the new place, Silky's, is located at the former Blue Chocolat and Three Layers space at the corner of 6th and Walnut in Springfield. It's a really nice space. People in the neighborhood very familiar with it. So tell me a little bit about how you plan to do this in a way that makes sense while we're still in a pandemic.
Yes. So we're doing an upscale fast casual concept where product is going to be served in disposable products. We'll have like quarter sheet pans, 8 sheet pans lined with logo deli paper and whatnot. And then the sides and the dishes will come out covered and wrapped before they're presented. So if you think about the flow of how things are prepared, you know, we want to know that staff are wearing masks and they're preparing in a safe manner, even beyond the normal food safety guidelines. And then when it's delivered to the table, we want the guests to know that they're getting their product that no one else had any potential of contaminating when it's going from the kitchen to their table. So we're working really hard on trying to make sure that those details are put in place. And so everything's going to be disposable so that basically you know that you actually are receiving utensils and whatever you're going to be eating with, like it's just for you. And then that way there's no risk of any potential contamination.
And there is a patio at this restaurant space, so people can do outdoor dining too, correct?
Yes, there's about, I'm going to say there's 12 to 14 seats on the patio. So that is a beautiful little Zen garden. There's a big old bamboo tree in the back and some shrubs that we're letting grow up. It's a beautiful space. You know, nice strong lighting that's up, and we're going to have some nice solar lights that are kind of line the pavers going around. So it's going to be well lit and very comfortable at night as well.
Okay, so you have the permitting in place, you have the menu in place. When can we stop by and enjoy all the great stuff on your menu?
I literally 10 minutes ago just received a pass from the health inspector, so we can legally open like now. So we still have a couple little things to do. We're kind of, everything's clean and detailed and in place, and we're getting all the electronic stuff up. So for the most part, the goal would be between November 3rd and November 10th. I think we should be able to do it. I mean, if we open up the 3rd, it'll be very soft opening. I know that's Election Day. Mm-hmm. But we think between the 3rd and 10th will be a good span of time.
So exciting. And as a Springfield resident, our family, we will definitely be stopping by. So kudos to you, Kenny. I can't wait to check it out. Chef Kenny Gilbert and his wife, Anna, preparing to open a brand new place in Springfield. It's Silky's Chicken and Champagne Bar at the site of the former Three Layers and Blue Chocolat at 6th and Walnut in historic Springfield. Check it out. Kenny, see you soon. Thank you again for stopping by.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Thank you.
Chicken and champagne. That sounds like a winning combo to me. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is our director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield runs our digital in the newsroom. And keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We appreciate all of your feedback. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.